Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's exactly 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Got a great lineup of guests today. Lance Twitchell is going to be here very shortly and tell us about the end of the year of rethinking racism in Juneau. There's a big reflection and discussion going to be presented as the last presentation for the Evening at Egan program, so that's coming up tonight. Patrick Murphy's going to be in concert on Saturday. He'll be here to give us maybe a tune, and definitely some words about that. Emily Lockie will bring him in. The Lynn Canal Fire Station is having their second annual open house. That'll be Saturday from 12:30 to 4:30. We'll have some folks in to tell us about that. Kealoha is in town, Poet Laureate of Hawaii. This is a big weekend for poetry, so we'll have details on that. And Kerry Gray is unicycling across the United States, and he'll come in and tell us about that interesting, incredibly interesting adventure. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new study theorizes that there could be more frequent and more violent storms with increased flooding and erosion in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta in Alaska over the next 50 to 100 years. Researchers point to climate change. The study by the U.S. Geological Survey and the University of Alaska used remote sensing technology and included Alaska Native traditional knowledge. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
Alaska scientists used satellite images to look through clouds during storms and for the first time could see how far tidal flooding on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta extended inland. It was much farther than they imagined.
It can go just about 20 miles inland during these really large storm events.
That's Tor Jorgensen, a landscape ecologist and adjunct professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and co-author of the study. The data allowed them to map and document the extent of the region's flooding for the first time. Jorgensen's projections show sea level could rise 1 to 3 feet in the region over the next 100 years. The study also looked at the retreat of sea ice because it dampens the effects of storm surges in the winter. A delay of freeze-up could allow big storms and significant surges to extend into December and January. Dr. Craig Ely is a research wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey and co-author of the study.
Over a couple of days, what happens is the tide comes up and then the wind pushes the tide inland even more, and then the winds are so high the tide doesn't get a chance to leave.
Winter storms could have huge impacts. Freshwater habitats converting to saltwater ones, heavy sediments smothering vegetation, low-lying permafrost plateaus collapsing, and villages eroding away. 81-year-old Leo Moses of Chivat says he has no doubt he's seeing climate change.
The permafrost is going. Eventually, we won't have any permafrost. What kind of future we have, I have no slight study.
Jorgensen says warming temperatures and increased flooding will impact the YK Delta region in his lifetime.
I'm anticipating that most of the permafrost in this region will disappear in the next 30 to 50 years.
The findings of the study are in the most recent issue of the journal Arctic. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
This week, we reported on the Keystone Pipeline bill, which fell in the U.S. Senate Tuesday. Shortly after the votes were read, Greg Greycloud, a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, began an honor song.
Sergeant-at-Arms will restore order. Order in the gallery.
Greycloud, who's a co-founder of a domestic violence prevention program on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota, says he felt overwhelmed with joy and pride that there were just enough senators to say no to big oil. He says in the Dakota and Lakota tradition, those who display leadership are honored.
As a singer, you know, I have that ability to honor individuals through song.
Greycloud says the song is by the Eagle Whistle Drum Group and the Redleaf Bad Hand Singers. It was made in the 1980s to oppose coal mining. He asked permission to sing it and believes it was appropriate for the senators.
And it means, Grandfather, look at me. I am standing here struggling, defending my grandmother Earth. I am chasing peace.
Greycloud says his message is that the indigenous voice is being heard. For his actions in the gallery, he was arrested, detained for 5 hours, and charged with disrupting Congress. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is KTOO in Juneau. It's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest is here to tell us about a program which has been going on all semester, all year. I'm not sure.
It's about a year's worth of training and activities that have led up to this.
Okay, so you're hearing the voice of Lance Twitchell. Lance is an assistant professor at the University of Alaska Southeast in Alaska Native Languages, an exciting professorship, I have to say, because this is not – you're the first one, aren't you?
Well, yeah. So I really follow in the footsteps of several others before me, but I'm the first to have this tenure-track position, which is built by – several people, David Kantzik, Richard Dauenhauer, probably more than anybody. And so it's really exciting to be in this field. And last night we celebrated two things, which was the passage of House Bill 216, which we've been waiting to celebrate, which makes all Alaska Native languages the co-official languages of Alaska.
Ah.
And then also House Bill 217, which honors Walter Soboloff with Walter Soboloff Day in Alaska.
We held Walter Soboloff Day this year, regardless of whether there was an official officialness to it.
So the act passed, and so this was the first year that it was there. And then there was a parade downtown, and in our Tlingit classes, we have a great video of him talking about the experience of veterans and also the ways you can sort of come to realize who you are through our languages. So we watched his videos throughout the week and in all of our language classes, and it's just amazing. The work he did was just amazing. And when we think about this evening's event, we're certainly thinking of the elders who came and would spend time with us and talk to us about how to prepare yourself for discussions like we're going to engage in this evening.
So, Lance, this is not just an explanation of what you did, but a continuation of the process, actually.
Yeah.
This has been an ongoing discussion of racism in Juneau that's gone on all year long.
Correct. About a year ago, we had a series of presentations which sort of present individual perspectives. And we had a working group which involved several key members of our community getting together and talking about social justice and racial equity. And some of that is coming to an understanding of terms and how power works and how privilege works. This evening, however, is going to be different. We're employing some tools by the Andor movement, which comes out of the First Alaskans Institute. And Andor is Alaska Native Dialogues on Racial Equity. And what they teach is utilizing a series of social technologies, is what they call them, to make these discussions more fluid. So last year was successful, but we saw it as a start to say, well, let's start talking about this. And tonight will be very different, where instead of sitting and listening to people talking about it, it's actually going to be a series of activities where if you attend, you're part of that discussion. And we're going to do it in a way that's safe, and this usually the evening at Egan is recorded and broadcast and archived. And in this case, it isn't. Because people, it changes the dynamic if there's a camera there or if you know your words are being recorded. The dynamic is already somewhat sensitive, so we want people to feel like they should be free to express themselves and how they feel. And sometimes you're dealing with a lot of pain, sometimes you're dealing with misunderstanding. But I think these are things that our community needs to elevate as just something we do on a regular basis, is we're able to have these conversations and have them in ways that are pushing for equity and equality. And not just trying to make people feel bad, but also, you know, the number one thing is, how do we just keep making things better? How do we make things better? And when we say better, that means you are less likely to encounter racial hostility. And it varies from person to person and group to group. But we're trying to get away from the personal experience and look at the larger picture of the social dynamics that allow racism to continue in its various forms.
Lance, you used an interesting term, social technologies, that the Andor group brought to you. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? What kinds of things did they use? What sorts of things?
So they've been involved with other groups that are utilizing these different methods. And so there's different things that you'll see so that there's sort of a prescription to the way the conversation takes place. In some cases, it could be we're going to solicit words from people, and then we're going to gather those, you know, we'll say, describe racism in Juneau in one word. And then we'll collect everybody's word, and we'll share that with everybody. And we're going to do an exercise like that tonight. Other things will focus on listening instead of speaking, because it's a big part, is being able to hear what people are saying. And then so they have a whole series of activities, and their goal, they're funded by the Kellogg Foundation, is to go into different organizations and communities and work with especially individuals who are really trying to push and advocate for change in their communities, and say, here's some tools you can use. Because sometimes these conversations are very hard to have. And sometimes they're hard to have because they're emotional. And sometimes they're hard to have because some people will keep you from having them. You know, they're in a position of power, and it's hard for people to take a look and say, this is the privilege that I have, say, as a white male in America, where the nation was built for you, you know, and things are changing now. But historically, you know, that was the model of success, of trust, of, and, you know, all these guys that are on our dollar bills and our wallets. And so we try to challenge a lot of those things, and do it in ways that recognize that these conversations are hard, and there's reasons why these conversations are actually pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. So tonight's event will be part of this ongoing conversation. I guess the question that I have is, it can't end tonight. I mean, this has to be an ongoing thing. And you said that the Andor group is funded by Kellogg and will be doing this round. What else will be happening at the University of Alaska Southeast?
Well, we're going to try and explore a number of things, from having our students and engage in our faculty and sort of share their perspective on what goes on in a classroom. And that creates a really interesting dynamic as well, where the professor is on the other side and can only listen to what's going, you know, to the student perspective. Because say a student encounters something in a classroom, and if that sort of if there's some environment that does not allow them to express themselves and their culture and how they feel about race and race relations, there's a power dynamic in the classroom as well. So if they feel like they cannot talk back and express themselves, they have a fear of retribution. It might affect their grade. We look at, there's some issues going on in the Juneau School District right now that are honestly just really shameful, as far as introducing curriculum that's, it's a model of cultural appropriation to write about the Trail of Tears and the Cherokee people and to not be Cherokee whatsoever. And when there's several of us who've shared that material with people from the Cherokee Nation, and they disapprove of that material. But those who are trying to remove it from the school district are being accused of censorship and book burning. And so it's interesting to try and have the, you know, I think it's a continuous series of conversations to try and make things better, from the daily experience, say you go somewhere and they won't serve you in some sort of business because of who you are, or maybe they follow you around through a business because of who you are. And we want to continue putting those dialogues on the table. So we have a number of community partners here, individuals to organizations, the Northern Light Church, members of organizations like Sea Alaska and UAS, and we're going to continue to search for partnerships to have these meaningful dialogues. And the key to some of these dialogues is we're always trying to figure out, well, what do we do? You know, we can get this on the table, but how do we start creating real change so that there is equity in our community, and that there is a chance for people to say, you know what, it's not right to treat people like this just because we might be different as far as our culture or our ethnicity goes.
This sounds like a really powerful opportunity for people to engage in the process that has been ongoing and will continue to go on after this is over. This is tonight's evening at Egan. It's the final evening in Egan for this season. It's at 7 p.m. You're in the Egan Library tonight, and it's an open discussion on racism. I think it's important that people who are thinking of attending tonight should understand that you are not going to record this, that this is one of the rare evening at Egan presentations which is not going on video, so people can open their hearts if they want to and not feel like they're going to wind up on YouTube day after tomorrow.
Yeah, if something comes out wrong, you know, it's not going to be forever on the record. But also, if you're not there, you're not going to have a chance to participate. So we're really hoping a lot of people from our community, and the idea is to show some of these social tools and say, hey, you know what, we can bring the Andor folks down here to start teaching more organizations how to host more things like this. So it's not all coming from the university or all dependent on just a few organizations, but instead there's this larger movement that says, you know, we can talk about this, we could be adults, we can be compassionate human beings, and we can just try to continue making this world better for future generations.
Lance, thank you so much for the effort that I'm sure it has taken to put this program, to work on this program through the season. And thank you so much for bringing us the information so we know that this is available to us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, wonderful colleagues who've all put in tons of time. Thank you.
Perseverance Theater subscriptions make great gifts. Guarantee your seats or seats for a loved one with a Pick 3 subscription. The Odd Couple is proving to be very popular already. In addition, we have two other amazing plays, The Imagined Last Night of Dr. Martin Luther King in the Mountaintop, and a touching new comedy about love and relationships, Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England. For more information, visit ptalaska.org, call 463-TIXS, or visit us at Public Market. Give the gift of theater this holiday season.
It's 17 minutes, almost 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My next guest is going to tell us about, an exciting second annual. This is a big open house out at the Lynn Canal Fire Station, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we are going to be having
Tell us who you are.
Oh, sorry. I'm Emily Lockie. I'm a volunteer firefighter at the Lynn Canal Fire Station for CCFR.
Okay.
We are having a fire and EMS-themed carnival. We have about 16 activities planned. We have some hands-on activities for adults and children. We're going to be offering some hands-only CPR classes as well as fire extinguisher classes.
Mm.
We also are going to have an ambulance-themed ball toss, a low-profile maze, and pin the helmet on the firefighter. So... And part
with,
of the,
with live firefighters?
Yes, with live firefighters.
<All right. laughs>
So, and we are hosting the ASFA, which is the Alaska State Firefighters Association Juneau chapter, is helping host a soup and dessert fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So 25% of the proceeds will go to Shop with a Cop for the fire marshal helps with that every year to help provide Christmas presents for the children. And we will also be using the proceeds for community outreach as well as helping outfit get purchase additional equipment for our new squad that we have just received from the city.
Okay, so this is at the Lynn Canal Fire Station.
Yes.
How do you get there?
You drive out the road
mm-hmm.
towards the ferry terminal, and you keep going until you see mile 18. The fire station is on the right-hand side of the road.
And easy to spot. There's lots
Very
of parking
easy.
Out there.
Yes.
Huge parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like that. And this starts at 12:30.
Yes, at 12:30.
And is there food?
There is food.
Okay. So
yes.
This is not a starvation program.
No. Okay. And the event is free and open to everyone to come and enjoy.
Okay. Now I want to go back to this business of the fire extinguisher activity.
Okay.
If people come, are they actually going to get to fire a fire extinguisher?
That's the plan.
Okay. At flames?
Yes.
Outstanding. You know, I went through CERT training,
mm-hmm.
and I won't tell you how old I am, but the first time I ever held a fire extinguisher in my hand and actually had occasion to make it go off
mm-hmm.
was during CERT training 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how many people have shared that same thing with me since I've mentioned that a few times, that They're on the wall of half the buildings I walk into or better.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never held one in my hand or seen what it does until I put a fire out with one out there at the Hagevig Fire Training Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really something that I think everybody ought to do because it's not straightforward. You gotta spray low in order to get the flames to go out.
Yep.
And if you spray high, it's not going to do a darn thing.
Exactly.
So here's an opportunity to actually do something that you can't just do this in your backyard. God, don't do it in your
yeah,
backyard.
<no. laughs>
But here's a chance under supervision to grab a fire extinguisher and have the thing go off in your hand and know exactly what that's going to feel like and what it's going to do. And I think it could save somebody's life.
Exactly. And that's our hope, is to reach out to the community and offer some informational classes that can actually help save lives.
Lynn Canal Fire Station Number 2, second annual open house, tomorrow, November 22nd, from 12:30 to 4:30. Go on out, and Emily will be there in uniform. You can pin the helmet on the firefighter. Is that going to be you? Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you
a lot for telling us about it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 21st of November, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who gave the piece of writing advice: whenever you feel an impulse to perpetrate a piece of exceptionally fine writing, obey it wholeheartedly and delete it before sending your manuscript to press. Murder your darlings. Sir Arthur Quiller Couch, born in Cornwall, 1863, writer, anthologist. It's the birthday of Voltaire, born Paris, 1694, the great satirist, who was thrown out of Paris for the first time when he was just 21 for writing a poem critical of the king. He came back to France and then insulted the royal family again. That time they threw him into the Bastille for almost a year. Voltaire spent much of his life fleeing or being sent into exile, where he would manage to offend somebody in the country which had offered him shelter. Finally returned to Paris just before he died in 1778. He said in his final farewell, "I die adoring God, loving my friends, not hating my enemies, and detesting superstition." It's the birthday of Isaac Bashevis Singer, born in Poland, 1904, came from a family of rabbis, grew up in a Jewish quarter of Warsaw, emigrated to this country in 1935, and composed his dozens of short story collections, his novels, his memoirs, almost entirely in Yiddish, such as his short story Yentl, the Yeshiva Boy, which was made into a movie, which Singer himself despised because of its happy, hopeful ending. When he received the Nobel Prize in 1978, he delivered part of his acceptance speech in Yiddish. Here's a poem for today by Jeffrey Harrison, entitled "The Shoulders of Women." Bored by the featureless speeches at the fundraising dinner, I scan the hotel ballroom for something to look at and discover, thank God for sleeveless dresses, the shoulders of women, pale moons aglow above the linen-covered tables, smooth and rounded like the neighboring breasts. They're less obvious and more complex, their inner mechanism of muscle, tendon, cartilage, and bone giving detail and highlights to their contours, making more exquisite the way the skin is pulled taut across the clavicle's diagonal ridge, then dips into that shallow well above it, the way it curves down, then up again, unseen, into the nether hollow of the underarm, that tender pocket, the shoulder's hidden nest. The speaker patters on about how there has never been a more important time than now, and I have to agree, because when will I ever see a collection of shoulders as marvelous as this? I feel blessed to have been let in on this open secret. All over the room, women revealing the rounded upper corners of their nakedness, and when the speeches finally end, I applaud, not for what was said, but for these women, for the shoulders they have so generously given. The Shoulders of Women, a poem by Jeffrey Harrison from Into Daylight, published by Tupelo Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 26 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting your Juneau afternoon presentation today, and my next guest is quite an honor for Juneau to have. Kealoha is the poet laureate of Hawaii, but I was teasing him beforehand because I was saying to him that this is probably the only time in my life that I have ever interviewed a nuclear physicist who turned poet. So welcome to Juneau, and welcome to a chance for us to learn from you, because I understand one of your presentations is about how to do a poem on stage.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're actually going to do that for us.
Yeah, that's the idea. We're giving you a whole gamut of ways to experience the poetry and the art and the movement and all that stuff. So, starting tonight, we have the Poetry Slam at Silver Bow. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing a quick feature there. And then tomorrow, the workshop is going down at 1 to 2:30 over at the Jack. And then later on in that evening, I'm doing a whole hour and a half performance for the good folks at the Jack from 7 p.m. Till 9.
So I got to go back to this nuclear physicist.
Let's do it.
Your biography is wonderful, because evidently you wandered into a poetry slam, had no idea what you were doing there.
Yeah.
And it literally changed your life.
It literally changed my life. I mean, I was living in San Francisco at the time, just kind of, I didn't have a purpose to my life. I had this science background, and at the time I was doing business consulting, which was a whole different world, and I was just thinking to myself, well, every day I'm waking up, I'm working like my butt off for 12 hours, 14 hours, and wake up, go to work, go home, make dinner, eat dinner, go to sleep, wake up the next morning, do the same thing over and over again. And one night, I just opened up the paper. I wanted to see what was going on in the city. I figured if I'm going to be living in the city, I need to experience the city. And I went to, I saw a poetry slam was happening very near where I lived. So I thought, that sounds cool. That sounds interesting. I didn't know what poetry slam was at the time. And I just, stumbled in. And that night, I was hearing some of the best poets in San Francisco doing their thing. And I'm sitting there in the chair in my brain starts to throb and my spine is tingling, and because they were speaking to me, like directly to me, I felt, and the art form just sort of, I got the bug. I got the bug. I got infected by poetry, and I just couldn't stop writing that night. And then the next morning at work, instead of typing away and on my PowerPoint presentations or whatever, I was typing away poems, and it just kept going on and on and on. I couldn't stop writing, so eventually I just had to leave that world, leave the business consulting world, and leave the science world, and just start going head first into poetry.
Nora Dahlenauer is the outgoing poet laureate. Writer laureate is what we call it in Alaska, the writer laureate of the state of Alaska. I had Nora Dahlenauer on the show one time, and she read some poetry to me, and it was the first time I realized, when I heard her read it in her voice, how informed her poetry is by the fact that she's a Tlingit.
Huh.
She writes in English.
Mm-hmm.
She also writes some in Tlingit itself, but she writes in English. But because of her the way her brain is bilingual and so acculturated into the Tlingit culture,
mm-hmm.
there's this thing that comes through her poetry that kind of, you sit there and you close your eyes and you hear this voice, and it's the voice of Tlingit doing things in English. So the question is, does your background inform your poetry?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't break away from it. You know, as much as I try, I am very much informed by everything that has happened in my life from the past. Whether it's, you know, growing up as a Hawaiian kid in Hawaii, you know, going into the science and engineering field and studying nuclear physics, whether it's analyzing data from businesses and breaking down problems and, you know, getting analytical with things. I mean, I'm always just, in my poetry, I'm bringing everything that I have. And that's helping to inform the way that I write, the way that I think, and what I'm trying to communicate.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Can you give me a for instance?
just a quick poem?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Sure. We've been growing a garden around our place. We don't have much space, but we've been working the soil beneath our feet, watching the green sprout over the concrete, watching the vines rewrite the graffiti on the walls. Mm. And we know this garden is a simple symbol. There's so much more to be done in this world, and sometimes it gets overwhelming, but we're taking responsibility for what we can control. And so, we're starting by planting seeds and caretaking, making the ecosystem thrive, watching the earth come alive, reflecting on the way we're living our daily lives. See, we've been growing a garden over time, so when we step outside, we can visualize what green energy looks like, to remind ourselves that we are no different from the trees, that all the energy we need can come from the sun, the wind, the sea, and the infinite warmth of geothermal heat. And we know that another world is possible, that no matter how hopeless any one of us feels, this movement is real, that our convictions lead to legislation, lead to conservation, that technology must serve ecology, and so this garden is how we redefine the boundary lines between us and the global community. We have come to learn that there's no separation, that every nation on this blue planet is symbiotically fused, that everything we do affects some part of you, so we've been inspired to limit our impact, leave our surroundings better off than when we arrived. We have vowed to reverse the destructive tide before we die. See, we've been growing a garden over time, we've been growing a garden for our children, leaving a better world for them to live in, teach them to caretake what they've been given, show them to take a stand for sustainability, how to find a balance between progress and preservation, guide the way to a self-reliant revolution. You see, this garden is for our children. This garden is our pledge to them.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's all, I heard it all. I heard all of the
it's
things
all in there.
It's all coming from... you know, your whole, all the way back to your genealogy, it's right there, and that's what drives the thing.
Cool. And thanks, man.
I got to say, I'm sitting here opposite you. I wish we had television. you put so much of your soul in that presentation that it's like, wow. Yeah, I'm sitting here watching you, and you're believing what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's really what I'm trying to get at with the workshop tomorrow, yeah, from at the Jack, is that I want people to find their poems. I want them to find what their poems mean to them, and then to be able to bring that and perform that on stage. And just like, it's the way that I've spent the past 12, 13, 14 years trying to find my voice, trying to find my poems, and trying to understand exactly what my viewpoint is in this world.
Okay, and that workshop is from 1 to 2:30. It's at the Jack here, on the Jack stage. And there is a charge for it, but as I understand it, there are some grants available if people want to come to it and they don't have the cash to...
Yeah, exactly. They can fill out a quick little form and apply for that grant. I mean, they'll get a quick response, I assume.
Yeah.
And then, boom, they're in.
Okay, 1 o'clock to 2:30. And then the show is tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And whoever wins, now you're going to be a special guest at the Wushkanadie Slam, which is what day? That's at Silver Bow.
Tonight.
Tonight at 6:30.
Yep.
Whoever wins that, and I'm assuming you're not competing.
I'm not. I'm going to do a quick little teaser set.
Because it'd be so embarrassing if you won, you'd have to open for yourself. You know?
That'd be kind of weird.
yeah. But be that as it may. Okay, so, and then your actual show is 7 o'clock, and whoever wins the Wushkanadie Slam is going to be opening for you.
Yeah.
This is a terrific opportunity for lots of people. And thank you so much for the incredible little preview of what it is you do.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me on this program.
Let's all dash out and get tickets and sign up for the workshop and all like that, folks. Saturday, November 22nd, 1 to 2:30, the workshop. Saturday, November 22nd, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. The show is where at?
At the Jack.
At the Jack, okay. Mm-hmm. And the Whoosh Canadier Slam is at the Silver Bow, and that's at 6:30 tonight.
There you go.
Okay. Hey, welcome to Juneau. Glad we could turn out some real Hawaii weather for you out here.
Thank you so much for putting in the request.
Good stuff here. Okay. Hey. See you. I'm going to play a little music by our next guest, and then we'll be hearing from our next guest. So here we go.
What you do is what you do.
What I do is irrelevant to you.
You tip it slow, then spit it up.
And then you go and refill your cup.
You've got no sense of manners. Got no sense of manners. There's nothing left in the mustard jar. There's no beans in the cupboard. There's nothing left to do but pack it up and drive. Water hole is too far away from here.
Tell the truth, I'm not that thirsty, my dear.
Kept awake by indecent nightmares, I guess. Nothing left in the mustard jar. There's no beans in the cupboard. There's nothing left to do but pack it up and drive.
Recording is one thing, but having the actual artist in the studio is yet another. Patrick Murphy is here with me. Hi.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, it's my great pleasure. So you're doing a concert Sunday night at the Gold Tower.
No, Sunday. It's kind of a funny thing. It's
1
Sunday
o'clock
matinee,
yeah,
1 o'clock
okay.
at the yeah. Gold yeah. Tower Nickelodeon. It's going to be pay as you can with a $10 suggested admission. Any profits made from the show I'm going to donate to the Lusco Farms Animal Rescue, the donkey sanctuary out of Malvern, Iowa. Hmm. But I really just wanted to do a concert, and so I'm playing at the Nickelodeon.
So this you or you?
Well,
and?
No, I'm gonna. I'm a songwriter, and I as well as doing a lot of different things in town. And if you're a songwriter, what do you do with them? You know, unless you're like a famous. I haven't in my life as a musician. I haven't figured out the answer to that question yet. You know, if you're in a working band, you can play your songs in clubs or whatever. Or if you, if people are covering your music, you're being inspired to write for them. But if you're just a songwriter because they rattle around in your brain and you can't get rid of them until you write them down, what do you do with them? And in my position, which, you know, I'm a music teacher, so I'm very aware of what I sound like. And as a singer, you know, my voice sounds like me, and I'm comfortable with that, and I love to sing. But I also know, you know, that that's one sound. And so how do you go out, and if you've got, like, you want to do 20 songs, who wants to listen to one guy play 20 songs? And so I've got the Nickelodeon lined up, and the first half of the concert I'm very excited about. I have friends of mine who are musicians that are covering songs I wrote. See, Scott Fry is going to be playing, Owen Cruz and Travis Croteau and Colette Costa. And aside from, I'm going to back up Colette and play guitar with her, but the other performances I'm not even involved in, which is just thrilling for me, actually, because I have a lot of respect and admiration for these guys that are playing my songs and think they're great musicians in their own right, and to hear their take on something. And then also, as a songwriter, it's kind of funny. There's songs you write for a purpose sometimes, you know, maybe it's a mourning song, or maybe it's a frustration song, or, you know, some feeling that you want to get out, and you might not necessarily choose to play that song all the time anymore, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have its own quality and it is not still a piece of art, even though you're not out performing it. And so having other people cover your songs, and a couple cases I kind of assigned songs I would like to hear.
I was going to ask that. Yeah.
And a couple cases I didn't, and it was interesting.
Let them decide what they... Yeah, okay.
I wrote a song for my sister who passed away about 6 years ago that I just can't perform anymore. It's just too emotionally hard to play it. I still like to listen to it. Once in a while, I'll listen to it. And my friend Travis is going to cover it on Sunday, and so I'm thrilled to hear that. I wrote a song 15 years ago for an ex-mother-in-law, an ex-mother-in-law, that I never intended to really have heard. And, you know, that's what C. Scott Fry has picked out of the collection of songs that he wants to perform on Sunday. So that's kind of fun too, is how people will take things and what they'll do with them. And then in the second half,
go back to the song. Did Fry know that you didn't think you'd ever hear the song, or did he find it? I mean, I'm curious. Was he trying to bug you?
No. Scott's a wonderful guy. No, it was a hidden track on that. The record you were playing when I walked in, I did I think 15 years ago, Pantry. I had that song and I recorded it and I loved the recording, but I couldn't really list it on there because immediately if people knew it, they would figure out who.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of the John Boy Walton effect, you know, you write about the people you live with. Sometimes it's a little much. So, which is one of the nice things about having other people cover your music. It depersonalized it and then it becomes a song or a story on its own right. Owen's covering one I wrote years and years ago, based on Christmas letters, you know, the family letters you get that are photocopied and everybody tells you what they did for the year, and that's the only time you ever hear from them. And it was kind of about a series of those and realizing that aside from that one little tradition, you don't really know those people anymore. And I kind of named some names, and I wrote this one, I think, 15, 16 years ago, named some names and did some descriptions of characters that, if it was played in my hometown, would be seen as kind of sensitive, but, you know, as a work of its own, it becomes like an aural play. You know, there's characters and there's a storyline, and I think all that's really interesting. And I think being able to get other people to play your music, that kind of frees the song up to have its own character.
Yeah. Well, speaking of having its own character, let's make sure everybody understands this is a concert tomorrow at 1 p.m. at Goldtown, but you got a guitar in front of you.
I do, and I'm going to play. I wanted to say one more thing about the concert.
Yeah, go ahead.
The second half of the concert, I'm playing with some of my friends who I just love to play with or that I wanted to play with. I put a band together, and I'm playing. Alexi Painter is playing bass, and he's a former student of mine from way back when, and that's really cool for me to get to play with a former student. And then Ben Higdon's playing guitar, and he's just a fantastic guitar player. And I used to play jazz with him years ago, and now that we're playing this kind of stuff, it's a lot of fun. Dale McFarland's playing drums, and Dale and I have known each other for a long time. I've wanted to play with him for years, and we never have. And so kind of put it together a project that I could play with Dale on. And then Libby Stringer's playing fiddle, and I've played with Libby number of times, and she's just a great musician and a lot of fun to play music with. So.
Well, this is going
to
be a musical event. It starts at 1. Yeah, and goes until they close down the town. And
No. I have players in Chicago, so it's going to go till they have to go. But I think I have it timed out. I'm going to try to not talk too much. I'm going to introduce a few of the songs.
And, sing.
All right.
Yeah, what are we going to hear?
This one's called Wheels, and it's a new one. I don't have a recording of this one yet, so. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time. Leave it on the roadside, take the plates, walk away. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time. And leave it on the roadside, take the plates, walk away. Early in the morning, everything is better. And quiet, the air is rich with the smell of raindrops and heartache. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates, walk away. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates, walk away. Early in the morning, everything is beautiful and somber. Robins ring the day and break upon the dawn like trumpets. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates, walk away. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates, walk away. Early in the morning, everything is frozen and timeless. Snowflakes pause before they melt upon the ground like bad memories. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates, walk away. Listen to the wheels grind, try to make a little more time and leave it on the roadside. Take the plates and walk away.
Well, that's Patrick Murphy for sure. You always sound like you know? Anyway, you remind me, a friend of mine had a Studebaker in college, and we literally signed the title and left it on the sink when he graduated. So,
my dad, he's a really soft-spoken Irish Catholic Midwestern farmer, and so he didn't really give me a lot of advice as a kid. But one was about cars, and he said, never pay more than what you have in your pocket, which everyone who knows me is laughing because I'm that way still. And when you're done, take the plates and walk away.
Take the plates and walk away. So this is a song from Dad's advice.
Yeah.
Patrick Murphy in concert with practically everybody musical in Juneau. C. Scott Fry, Owen Cruz, Travis Curteau, Colette Costa, Alexi Painter, Ben Higdon, Dale McFarland, Libby Stringer. It all starts at 1 o'clock. It's at the Gold Town Theater. Suggested donation of $10 and a terrific chance to hear some incredible music all afternoon, tomorrow afternoon at the Gold Town. Sunday afternoon.
Sunday at 1, kind of a free time. Okay. Come see us and then go to Chicago.
Yeah. All right. Which is sold out.
Which is sold out. You better have tickets.
So maybe you can bargain with somebody and maybe there'll be a scalper in the audience or something like that. Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for bringing the music to us.
You bet. Thank you.
Programming support on KTOO is provided by Silver Bow Bakery and Catering, announcing ready-to-serve Thanksgiving meals for 8 to 12 people or half orders serving 4 to 6, ready for pickup and eat Thanksgiving Day. Silver Bow Catering, accepting Thanksgiving orders at 586-4146.
This is Bird Note. Dick Ashford of Klamath Bird Observatory in Oregon completed a career with the Navy before learning about birds in earnest. Today, he describes himself as a continuing student of birds and birding. Like many, he's taking time to share his love of birds, like looking for red-shouldered hawks, with younger generations. One of the lucky ones is his 10-year-old grandson, Jack. Here's Dick.
A couple of years ago, I decided maybe it was time to see if Jack could stand a full day in the field looking at birds. And so we took the day after Thanksgiving, and I was able to show him in one day a golden eagle in the scope perched. I was able to show him a white-tailed kite in the scope perched, a northern harrier in the scope perched, plus an assortment of waterfowl, ducks, shorebirds over in the Great Central Valley of California. He felt that experience, and I'd like to think that some of it was because he was with his grandpa. I know that some of the experience for me was because I was with my grandson.
Bird Note salutes all who share their love of birds and enjoy days afield with young people. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Well, my next guest should have ridden in. This is the one-wheeled wonder. Cary Gray is riding across the United States on a unicycle.
That's right.
Which is, you said the wheel on the thing is 3 feet in diameter. Describe this beast to us.
Well, it's a unicycle that has a 36-inch wheel. Most bikes, if you want an idea, are 26. And it stands at about my chest height, so I need to jump on it when I get on. And it's about 85 pounds, so that's no easy task.
Yeah.
And I've crossed the U.S., and I went down through Central America, and I ran into some trouble, got my passport stolen. So I flew back to St. Louis, Missouri, where I was born, and worked there for a while, and that's where I left from about 2.5 months ago. Now I'm in Juneau.
And worked your way up to Juneau.
That's right.
Came up the highway, came down to Haines, did you ride back
and forth? No, actually, I went up to Rupert. So I went through B.C., didn't see sunshine for 3 weeks, and then Juneau had sunshine for a week.
Oh, okay.
So it was a treat.
So did you ride back and forth on a ferry?
No, the ferry didn't count for mileage. I just sat around.
All right. This is a truly insane idea. What possessed you?
Well, believe it or not, I just wanted to visit South America, and that sort of blew up into a bunch of other. I thought, hiking's not hard enough. I'll do it on a bike. Biking's not hard enough. Why don't I do it on a unicycle? Ha, what a great idea. But it's stuck, and
so
I've been riding unicycles for 15 years. And at that time, that was 3 years ago, so 12, 13 years I had been riding them. So I was really comfortable. I had been riding to school, to work, every single day I rode them. Not long distance, but just here and there and 2 miles at a time or whatever. But I thought, I can do this. I'll get a bigger unicycle, I'll train, and here I am.
Why so large? Because more pedal.
Well,
more
the thing is, with a unicycle, you have to continue to pedal just to stay up to counterbalance it, as opposed to a bike that you just have to lean to stay up and you don't have to pedal. So I have to continuously pedal, and I'm doing about 60 miles a day, on average. And so not only is the wheel bigger for continuity, but it's also for speed. So I have shorter crank arms, which are what the pedals are attached to.
Mm-hmm.
and a bigger wheel. So I don't have to work as hard. I mean, the hills are harder, but generally the flats are about the same as a bike.
So on the flat, what are you capable of?
On the flat, I do 10 to 12 miles an hour. And that's keeping in mind I'll be doing it all day. If I was just doing an hour, my fastest hour is 19 miles.
Okay.
For an hour.
So. Yeah. And you're carrying your own stuff?
I'm carrying all my own stuff.
How do you do that?
I have panniers. So this is one of the first times, I think, in history. I mean, people have sort of experimented with, but to this extent, this is the first time that someone has toured on a unicycle with panniers. The front pannier, there's kind of a crossbar, so my unicycle looks like a bike cut in half. So on the crossbar, there's a bag in front hanging and sort of fits between my legs, and then there's a bag behind my butt, quite a few bags in the back, and then I carry my water on my back in a camelback. So.
Mm-hmm. And how long does it take you to do the 10 to do the 60?
The 60 miles. Well, generally I do 10 to 12 miles an hour, and I don't I ride, you know, an hour at a time, and I'll stretch or whatever. Yeah. But it takes, you know, sometimes it takes all day, sunrise to sunset, depending on, you know, how short the day is. Here, that's a pretty short day. So, but 6 to 7 hours usually.
So when you're riding along through the countryside on a unicycle, it must gain some attention.
That's an understatement. I'd say 9 out of 10 people have some sort of reaction.
Uh-huh.
And then out of those 9 people, you know, 6 or 7 have a major reaction. And actually, it's come to the point where I'm sort of surprised when people don't have a reaction. They look and I can tell they know it's a unicycle.
Oh, some guy on a unicycle. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But then again, I ride it really smoothly, and I lean forward on what are called aero bars, which racer bikes have.
Uh-huh.
And so it almost looks like a bike. I'm not squirreling around. My arms aren't flailing, you know. So it looks a little bit like a bike, especially with the bags. So actually, you know, some people probably just think it's a bike, which for me is fine because then I don't have to worry about cars slowing down, taking pictures, you know, yelling random things at me. So, but it runs the gamut of
okay,
reactions.
Okay, let's go back 15 years before the start of the trip. What made you start this?
Unicycling in general?
Yeah.
Well, my dad and his brother, so on my dad's side, they rode, and so my uncle moved in next.
This is genetic.
Yeah, basically. But they never got as interested. Back, unicycling went through an initial sort of boom, and then now it's coming back with all kinds of sub-sports like off-road and long distance. But anyway, so when it was popular in their day, they just kind of rode around, and it was like the skateboard. It was just another toy. So my uncle moved in next door to us, and he taught me, and he gave me their old unicycle. And then also my uncle and my aunt on my mom's side, they used to ride. My aunt, she still rides, actually, and when she was a kid, she rode on a unicycle hockey team, which they do have. They have those, and they have unicycle football teams. I don't do those, but she does that, and she's supportive, obviously.
So, I mean, do they send, like, care packages to the places that you wind up or anything, or spare tires? Or
Well, no. They're supportive, but they don't really do that. I do have I have received a lot of help from a lot of generous folks. You know, I've received quite a few donations, and I've raised money for charity as well, so it's, you know, there's a lot of support out there. People can be really generous when you give them the opportunity. So
are you riding around town now in the rain here?
Right now, no. Luckily, I have another supportive person. I'm with a friend here, and she let me use her car to get here because I would have been late if not. So. And wet.
Yeah, late and wet. Well, I'm kind of glad you didn't. It's a little slippery out there.
Yeah.
How is the unicycle on a slippery, you know, on a rainy day?
On a rainy day, well,
does
it's not too
slip
slick because it is a treaded tire, so
mm-hmm.
it's technically for off road, not like downhill, but gravel off road. And I've done hundreds of miles of sort of gravel bike paths, so it can handle all kinds of slippery conditions. I actually rode in BC. I rode 112 miles. I woke up at 2:30, thinking that I would do a 24-hour ride, which I've always wanted to do, and the weather just threw everything at me. And eventually, at around sunset, around 4:30, I had to stop. But it rained, and then it snowed, and then went back to raining. So now you had slush, and the trucks would go by super fast and splash the slush on me. But that was probably the slickest it's ever been, the snow and the slush.
Yeah. It's supposed to snow Wednesday, or next week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you get a chance to do a little workout in slop.
Exciting.
Well, we have slop here. That's our definition of snow. Anyway, so it should be kind of fun. We get you out in the road and everything like that.
Yeah.
But you doing anything special? We've got about a minute left.
Okay.
Anything special while you're in Juneau?
Well, I've gone on a couple hikes. It's pretty exciting. I went up Thunder Mountain. I did stop at Harborview Elementary School. I have a program called Get Out There, where I go to elementary schools and I talk to the kids about getting out, getting active, that kind of stuff, and I jump on the unicycle. So that was pretty exciting. And then I'm jumping on the ferry tomorrow. So.
And going?
Going to Prince Rupert and then down to Vancouver.
And riding from Rupert down?
Going down the West Coast.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, more power to you.
Thank you.
Keep on one wheeling.
Friday, November 28th through Sunday, November 30th, KTOO will be at the public market. Stop by and take a look at our holiday auction items or purchase a tote bag to support public radio. Pre-bidding for the holiday auction begins November 28th online. We'll see you there.
Monday at 3, Scott Burton will be hosting Juno Afternoon. He's going to have Lauren Anderson on the show. They'll be talking about Treadwell White Ice Arena. Baker's getting ready for the Juno Co-op Preschool Pie Sale. Kristen Bartlett and Rustin Burton will be here. They have news about the United Way campaign and the Northern Lights Junior Theater's production of The Christmas Doll. So lots of things coming up on Monday's Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO in Juno. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, we're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.